Jim Pickett, welcome.
Thank you, Julia.
You've got a passion for history that drove you to teach it and write about it. So how and when did Harmer's defeat hook you?
I was probably in my single-digit age, 5, 6, 7, coming into Fort Wayne from New Haven with Mom to go shopping downtown. I remember seeing a sign that said Harmer's defeat, one of those white signs on a pole. Curiosity started there, and it wasn't really until I got fairly close to retirement that I started researching it a little bit and wondering about that. But, you know, back in the 50s and 60s, there was a lot of television shows with the cowboy and western and Civil War and all that type of thing. So it was a very interesting period of time to grow up. And the Civil War roundtable, I think, had as many as 100 people here in Fort Wayne.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that kind of got the hook there. And it wasn't until I really retired that I started doing some serious research about Harmer's defeat of 1790.
I'm glad you did. And would you give us a brief overview of the battle?
The Battle of Kikianga in 1790, Harmer's defeat, took place in the lakeside area of Fort Wayne, and it was between the Native Americans, made up of the Miami and the Delaware and the Shawnee, led by Little Turtle and Blue Jacket. And Harmer was the general at that time who led a federal army and militia from both western Pennsylvania and Kentucky. And there was an altercation in the middle of the Maumee River, and it spilled into the lakeside area and up through lakeside up the St. Joe River and spilled into the St. Joe River up near the Tennessee Bridge. So I thought this would make an interesting story.
Oh, indeed. And you chose to tell your story through the historical fiction genre with a heavy accent on historical. Why the fictional approach? Why did that speak to you?
Well, the historical fiction came about because there wasn't any newspaper accounts. And afterwards, there was a trial to find out if Harmer had done anything wrong. He was exonerated, but there was results from that, and many of the witnesses told what had happened. But the actual account, I had to connect the dots. There's a lot of journals, you know, hearsay of what happened. Harmer had a journal himself. There was another individual named Ebenezer Denny, who was kind of his right-hand man, who had a journal. So I just had to connect the dots. And the more research I did, I said, this might make a good story. And so I added some younger characters, and during my research, I found out that there were some young kids that were involved with Harmer's army, as well as older gentlemen. He did have a good federal army that he was in charge of, but the militia coming in were made of young people and older gentlemen, and a lot of Revolutionary War veterans. And then I thought, well, why not cover both angles? Why not cover the Native American side of it? And so Little Turtle's there, Blue Jacket's there, so I added some fictional characters to kind of give that perspective. So the book kind of goes back and forth. One chapter might be about the Native Americans, what they're thinking about at that time, and finding out about this huge army that's coming up from Fort Washington, that's Cincinnati today. And what were they thinking about in this huge army? A lot of it comes out in conversation. There is some narrative, but I try to make the reader experience the whole adventure, and it is an adventure story. These people are entering in the land that they're not too familiar with from the new American point of view, the settlers, and then you've got the Native Americans, and this is their land. They've known nothing else but to live up and down the rivers around the lakeside area, which was called Kikianga at that time, and George Washington called it Miami Town. So you've got the Omi River, which is the Maumee. You've got the St. Joe River, which they call the Bean River, of all things. And the St. Mary's River, which was called the Kettle River at that time by the Native Americans.
The human interest is so well put in your story. It has to speak to you or you couldn't write it so well. That's what
yes.
I'm thinking.
I think I was God-given imagination. I was given a God-given story, and I just used my imagination.
It's a great point, and yes, I have to agree with you on that. Also, you write from a very fair and balanced perspective. Was it difficult to find facts to support both sides of the battle as you were doing your research?
There's a lot of accounts out there. Yes, sorting it out and piecing it together. I tried to have at least two confirmations on facts that I was coming up with, and then connecting the dots on, you know, what was logical, you know, logically what would be going on at this time as far as the story is concerned, and what they were thinking and the strategy behind. You know, anybody can do their investigation on their own. In the back of the book, I've got some sources that they can look on their own and figure some things out on their own and read about it.
Well-researched and accurate sociological view of things at times.
Yeah.
Good for you for that one, to
Julie,
be sure.
Julie, I didn't want it to be a history book. I wanted it to be a story. I wanted it to be an adventure center that was based on history and tried to be as accurate as possible.
Yeah,
I had over 60 sources in this thing. So you had to sort it out. That was a long time ago. Nobody around was there.
That's today. Another good point. It takes like a current event and trying to research it. It has all its clouds of mystery. But no, I think you did a wonderful job
this.
And I do have to ask, Jim, did you ever either dead end or overdose on the research end of things when you're trying to ferret something out?
Julie, I don't think I've ever dead-ended on any of the research because I'm still researching it. I'm finding out things that are just confirming what I wrote about and adding to the story in my own mind. You know, and I think that's the way the book presents itself. If the reader wants to know more about it, go after it. You've got the internet. You've got a lot of things that you can go after.
That's a good challenge.
And you want to know more about. You know, I didn't want a thick 400 or 500-page book. I wanted something that was readable and enjoyable at the same time and have some excitement to it.
And also hook other people. I get it.
Yeah.
And who's your average reader, would you say?
Well, I'm, of course, geared it toward kids to learn about our local history, but I've got people of all ages that are reading it. Seniors, I'm getting some comments from them. They're really enjoying it. The young kids, I think they're starting to learn some things as I talk to moms at some of the gatherings I've been to. I don't think I'd go below 6th or 5th grade. Things were rough back then. I tried to, you know, to make it readable for younger age kids, but still presentable to everyone to use your imagination on what's going on. I didn't want to get into graphic details of some of the horrific things that took place. It was not a pleasant time in this area. War is pretty nasty at times. But the battle through the eyes of the fictional characters as well as the non-fictional characters, I thought came out pretty well.
For adults, too. It reads it reads very well. Again, it's a you were there kind of thing, I think, from your perspective.
It.
Yeah, that was your idea, and you did it very well.
Thank you.
On the subject of storytelling, Jim, it is trending now. As an educator and local historian, I know you're well aware of the story power. What kind of impact do you think and hope that the story part, the whole thing, has with the readers?
Well, I hope, you know, knowing our where we came from and who was here before us, I think can guide us through the present day. A lot of things that went on back then can kind of associate with what's going on today and perhaps lead us into the future. I think that's what history is all about. A lot of people think it's kind of boring and they don't see the purpose of it, but I think there is. It can guide us into the future as well as through the present time.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And especially when you get somebody's interest up. And you continue to get calls to lecture and do presentations on this topic and on your book. Were you expecting that kind of lasting interest when you wrote it?
Not really. I didn't know how much effort to put in to the promotion of the book. And word gets out and some people tells another one. So I'm getting emails. Can you come here and talk about it or present? And would you like to come over here for a book signing? So it's been enjoyable.
Time to do all of this too.
I'm retired. So, you know, this is, you know, one of the things that I was looking for at the time when I started writing this book. I say, you need to have something to do. I mean, you're teaching driver ed, but maybe there's more. And this story kept coming up, you know, in my mind.
All of your teaching career, you have a long life of various grades, various topics. I know that you did history, European, some American and everything. But is this the fulfillment that you maybe never thought you would have before you sat down and wrote this book?
There is no way I thought I would be a writer. I had some pretty good papers in college. I went to St. Francis here in town. But I knew there was something there. You know, during your lifetime, you figure out, yeah, I can put some words together occasionally if I have to. You know, you know, it was one of those things where I've moved on in my life and settled into an area that I really enjoy reading about and researching and just driving around town. I can't get it out of my mind. Every time I drive down one of the streets in Fort Wayne of the history that's around here, and I'm not sure a lot of people are aware of what we have. Every community has their history that they're proud of. But goodness gracious, when George Washington is sending an army into your community to engage the Native Americans, which we all know for centuries were here a long time before the Europeans came in, that is an amazing thing. Use your imagination on how it was, the forests around this area, and all there were Native American trails. And the interstate highway was the rivers. Coming down from Lake Erie, you can go all the way to New Orleans. The only time you'd have to cross land was between St. Mary's River and the Little Wabash River. And Tecumseh was in charge of that. So she made a lot of money through that area right there economically. So that's brought out. try to cover all the angles of what was going on economically back then as well. Fur trading, yes, and the trapping that was going on, the French that were around the area up and down the rivers, intermarrying with the Native Americans. And then you bring in a European army. What a clash, and clash of society.
Jim Pickett, a retired middle and high school teacher and currently a driver's ed teacher, is author of The Bones of Kikianga. Jim, we appreciate your sharing your story with us today, and good luck on all of your historical journeys.
Thank you so much, Julia, for having me on.